The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Dean Silver from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the book Month by Month Gardening in the Carolinas by Bob Polomsky. And we left off last time in June, and we were on the topic watering, and we left off with lawns. For lawns, water your lawn when it shows signs of stress, bluish gray color, footprints that remain in the lawn after walking on it, wilted, folded, or curled leaves. During long, dry, hot spells, you have two choices when it comes to watering an established lawn. Don't water. Let the lawn turn brown, or two, water the grass to keep it green. When a Kentucky bluegrass lawn turns brown during a drought, it's a sign of dormancy. The leaves and shoots die, but buds in the crown and rhizomes above underground stems generally remain alive and grow when more favorable conditions return. Tall fescue has no means of escape. 3 weeks or more without rain in the summer can injure or kill tall fescue. If your lawn is experiencing drought stress, apply about an inch of water per week in clay soils and a half an inch in sandy soils every 3 days. Set your irrigation system to apply the correct amount of water. Too much will be wasteful, and too little produces shallow-rooted plants. Whatever option you choose, to water or not to water, stick with it. Flip-flopping between the two can weaken your lawn. And for perennials and ornamental grasses, water recently planted perennials, which are especially vulnerable to heat and drought stress. Water thoroughly to encourage deep rooting. And for roses, keep the following ground rules in mind when watering your roses this summer. Newly planted roses need to be watered often enough to prevent the soil from drying out as they settle into their new surroundings. Reduce the frequency of watering gradually, but continue to water deeply to encourage the development of a deep, extensive root system. Roses in sandy soils will require more frequent watering than roses in clay soils. Roses will need more water when the temperatures are high than when they're cool. Water deeply and infrequently, wetting as much of the root zone as possible. Roots may extend to a depth of 6 to 12 inches. The goal is to produce deeply rooted plants. Shallow, frequent sprinklings on established plants encourage shallow roots. Keep the leaves dry by applying water to the soil surface. Fungal diseases such as black spot rely on moisture to infect and spread. Mulch your roses with a 2 to 3 inch layer. Organic mulches, compost, pine needles, pine straw, shredded leaves and wood chips, and conserve moisture and suppressed weeds and supply nutrients as they decompose. Keep the mulch a few inches away from the crown. For shrubs, trees, and vines and ground covers, water recent plantings which are especially vulnerable to heat and drought stress. Water thoroughly to encourage deep rooting and avoid irrigating shrubs with an overhead sprinkler. Besides wasting water and watering weeds, wetting the leaves encourages disease outbreaks. Use soaker hoses to water ground covers on slopes. This will reduce water runoff and soil erosion. And our next topic is fertilize. The annuals. Annual beds can use a boost, especially where the soil is sandy or the season has been raining. Apply slow-release fertilizer for maximum benefits with minimum effort. For a quick but brief response, water plants with a liquid fertilizer such as 20-20-20. Do not over-fertilize cosmos or nasturtiums, or you will run the risk of having a lot of leaves and few, if any, flowers. Excuse me. And next is bulbs. If summer flowering bulbs are not fertilized when their shoots emerged, it may be necessary to fertilize them now. Follow the manufacturer's instructions regarding the rate and frequency of application. Avoid over-fertilization, which can encourage the production of leaves at the expense of flowers. Let the appearance of the plant guide you. If the dahlias, gladiolas, and lilies look robust and are growing in a well-prepared, fertile bed, fertilization may be unnecessary. Stop cutting asparagus when the spears become thin. Fertilize the bed and allow the ferns to grow during the summer to store food in the roots for next year's crop. After they have set their first fruit, side dress eggplants, peppers, and tomatoes with a nitrogen fertilizer such as blood meal, calcium nitrate, or cottonseed meal. Side dress sweet potatoes 6 weeks after planting. And for lawns, do not fertilize cool season lawns at this time. Fertilize Bermuda grass and zoysia grass this month with a nitrogen fertilizer. Remember, this application will encourage growth, which translates into higher maintenance. For perennials, if you use the slow-release fertilizer early in the season, check the label and evaluate the growth and appearance of your perennials to see if a second application is warranted. For roses, avoid excessive fertilization. It produces the soft, succulent growth favored by pests. Try to grow your roses on the lean and mean side. Evaluate the quality and quantity of flowers and shoots produced by your roses and decide if a boost of fertilizer is warranted. Never skimp on building up the natural fertility of the soil with applications of organic mulches such as a compost. If you used a slow-release fertilizer earlier in the year, check the label and evaluate the growth and appearance of your ever-blooming roses to see if a second application is warranted. Supplement mulch with well-rotted horse or cow manure to add nutrients. And for shrubs and trees, if necessary, fertilize your palms with a slow-release nitrogen fertilizer. And the goal is to maintain growth. If the soil is low in magnesium or determined by a soil test, apply the recommended amount of Epsom salts. Pink flowers occur on French and lace cap hydrangeas with a soil pH between 6 and 6.5. In this pH range, aluminum becomes tied up or rendered unavailable in the soil and so is absent from the flowers. Use lime to increase the soil pH to this desirable range. To avoid having to maintain this pH, grow pink flowering cultivars such as Forever Pink and Pia. Fertilize trees based on need. If the trees are growing in a fertilized lawn, fertilizing may not be necessary. Time the application for the appropriate time for the grass. This is especially important for warm season grasses, which may be subject to winter kill if they're fertilized late in the fall or early in the spring. Because most of a tree's roots can be found in the top 12 inches of soil, the simplest way to fertilize them is with a rotary or cyclone spreader according to soil test results. For vines and ground covers, follow soil test results when fertilizing your vines and ground covers. Supplement mulch with well-rotted horse or cow manure to add nutrients. and for water gardens. Fertilize water lilies with aquatic fertilizer tablets using the amount prescribed by the manufacturer. Bog plants can be fertilized based on their growth rate and appearance. To play it safe, fertilize them at half the rate of your water lilies. And our next topic is problem solve. For annuals, be on the lookout for aphids, spider mites, snails, and slugs. Allow beneficial insects such as lady beetles to reduce aphid numbers. Aphids can sometimes be washed from plants with a strong stream of water. Many safe insecticides are available, including insecticidal soaps, horticultural oils, or neem. Apply according to label directions. Avoid overhead watering and remove spent flowers and dead or dying leaves. Keeping plants clean will reduce the chance of infection. Look for signs of powdery mildew on your garden zinnias. Infected leaves have a whitish-gray powder on both sides. Heavy infestations can cause the leaves to become curled and eventually yellow and die. Remove any infected plants and discard them. Thin out the bed to improve air movement. In the future, select varieties that are resistant to powdery mildew. Rabbits and deer can be a problem. Commercially available mammal repellents can be applied on or near your flowers. To make your own repellent, it says see problem solve, and we'll read that coming up later. And bulbs, pests to watch for include aphids, spider mites, thrips, and Japanese beetles. Handpick Japanese beetles and discard them into a jar of soapy water. Neem can be applied to the leaves to reduce feeding by the adults. Use other insecticides for heavy infestations. If the rhizomes of your bearded iris are riddled with holes, they can be infested with iris borers. Watch out for fungal leaf spot diseases during wet spring and summer seasons. To control leaf spot diseases, remove blighted leaves during the season. Remove and discard any infected foliage in the fall. Fungicides can be applied to control certain leaf spot diseases. Powdery mildew may be a problem on dahlias. This fungal disease commonly occurs during the spring and fall seasons, when the days are warm and humid and the nights are cool. This fungus is more severe on plants that are shaded or crowded. To reduce the chance of infection, improve air movement by sitting them in an open location and by selectively pruning out interior growth to eliminate congestion. Pick off and destroy infected leaves. And for edibles, corn earworm caterpillars chew on corn ears, gaining entry through the corn silks. Avoid this pest by planting corn earlier in the season or apply mineral oil on the corn silks 5 days after they emerge from the husk. Insecticides are also available. Watch out for leaf-footed bugs. Mites feed on nearly all vegetable crops, but are a common problem on beans, tomatoes, and eggplant. White flies are tiny insects that attack tomatoes, peppers, beans, cucumbers, squash, melons, and okra. Pickle worms mostly attack cantaloupe, cucumber, and squash. The young larvae usually feed on leaves and flowers. The older larvae bore into the sides of the fruit and continue to feed. Grow resistant varieties and plant early to harvest before the insects arrive. Squash vine borers are the larvae of a wasp-like clear-wing moth that lays oval, flat brown eggs on stems and leaf stalks of squash and gourds. Upon hatching, they bore into the stem, causing the vine to wilt and die. Squash vine borers are difficult to control with pesticides. Once inside the stem, they cannot be reached. The best control is prevention, and here's how. Cover seedlings or transplants with a layer of spun-bonded row cover to keep the adult moths at bay. This will have to be removed to allow pollination. To find stems attacked by borers, look for an entry hole near the base and some fine brown sawdust-like frass, insect feces. Carefully split the stem lengthwise with a penknife and remove the borers or kill them with a long pin or needle. Pinch or prune out any diseased leaves or stems on herbs. Watch out for bacterial wilt on tomatoes. And in most gardens, annual weeds can be controlled by mulching and hand weeding, using a herbicide in a herb and garden and vegetable garden is difficult because there are a few herbicides that can be safely applied to the wide range of plant species grown in the garden. Actually, it says because there are few herbicides, not too many herbicides that you can use when you're going to eat the vegetables. And be careful of that. And for lawns, beginning late this month, sample areas where you previously observed damage from mole crickets in the spring. Early in the morning or late in the afternoon, mix 2 tablespoons of liquid detergent in 1 gallon of water and pour it over a 1 to 2 foot square area. The detergent solution irritates the mole crickets, forcing them to the surface. Newly hatched mole crickets are only about 1/4 inch long and tend to disappear quickly after coming to the surface, so watch very carefully for 2 to 3 minutes. If small mole crickets appear, apply an insecticide according to the label directions. Irrigating dry soil 24 hours before applying the pesticide will cause mole crickets to move into the moist soil, making them easier targets. Be on the lookout for nematodes, which are microscopic soil-inhabiting eel-like worms that feed on turf grass roots. They are more commonly found in coarse-textured sandy soil than fine-textured clay soils. Nematode-infested roots cannot take up water or fertilizer as well as healthy ones. The infested lawn grass wilts easily and lacks normal green color. High nematode populations result in severe yellowing. The damage usually occurs in irregularly shaped or circular areas. Centipede grass is especially susceptible to damage by ring nematodes. Lance nematodes are often found on St. Augustine grass. And the best defense is to keep your lawn healthy. The healthier a plant, the less susceptible it will be to light or moderate nematode attacks. Brown patch is a devastating disease that attacks most fescue and bluegrass. It's favored by high temperatures and high humidity. Look for circular, tan-colored dead patches several feet in diameter. Sometimes there's a tuft of green grass in the center, creating a donut. This disease is most severe on grasses receiving high levels of nitrogen in late spring or summer. Collect and compost clippings from infected areas. Fungicides can be used to protect healthy grass from attack. Wait until fall to rake up dead areas and seed or sod. Look for gray leaf spot on St. Augustine grass. Infected leaves and stems have oblong tan lesions with blue-purple borders. The gray spores can sometimes be seen during warm, wet weather. When severe, the entire lawn may look scorched. collect the infected clippings while mowing and compost them. Gray leaf spot can be controlled with fungicides. During the growing season, use moderate amounts of nitrogen fertilizer, preferably one that contains 1/4 to 1/2 of the nitrogen in a slow-release form. Apply post-emergent herbicides as needed to control summer and annual and perennial broadleaf weeds such as knotweed, lespedeza, and spurge. Do not apply post-emergent herbicides unless weeds are present, grass is actively growing, and the lawn is not suffering from drought stress. And for perennials and ornamental grasses, be on the lookout for aphids, slugs and snails, spider mites, and thrips. Hand-pick Japanese beetles and discard them in a jar of soapy water. Neem can be applied to the leaves to reduce feeding by the adults. Use other insecticides for heavy infestations. Avoid overhead watering and remove spent flowers and dead or dying leaves. Look for signs of powdery mildew on garden phlox and bee balm. Infected leaves have a grayish-white powder on both sides. Heavy infestations can cause the leaves to curl and eventually yellow and die. Remove infected plants and discard them. Thin out the plants to improve air movement. Fungicides can be applied when the symptoms appear and until they're gone. In the future, select varieties resistant to powdery mildew. For roses, pests to watch for include rose aphids, spider mites, thrips, and Japanese beetles. Hand-pick Japanese beetles and discard them in a jar of soapy water. Neem can be applied to the leaves to reduce feeding by adults. Use other insecticides for heavy infestations. Be on the watch for black spot and powdery mildew. To avoid resistance to controls by the diseased organisms, when using synthetic fungicides, switch back and forth between different kinds. And for shrubs, pests to watch for include aphids, spider mites, and Japanese beetles. Two spotted spider mites, pale yellow, sometimes green, brown, or red, are hot weather mites. Becoming active during the heat of summer, they attack a wide variety of shrubs. Evaluate the extent of injury and decide if pest control measures are warranted. Gardenia and white flies go together like peanut butter and jelly. These tiny moth-like insects are a common pest. White flies feed by sucking plant sap from the leaves. Lightly infested leaves develop a mottled appearance, while higher populations cause leaves to yellow, shrivel, and die prematurely. Heavy infestations result in sticky leaves covered with a thin black film of sooty mold, a fungus that feeds on the honeydew excreted by the white flies. Azalea stem borers infest azalea, rhododendron, blueberry, and mountain laurel. Prune out the wilted twigs and discard them. Plant attacked year after year can be protected with an insecticide. Be on the lookout for root rot caused by the fungus, Photothora, which means plant destroyer. Hand pull or use a herbicide to spot treat water and nutrient stealing weeds from your shrub beds and borders. A makeshift cardboard shield can be used to protect your shrubs from accidental contact with the herbicide. Suppress their emergence with a layer of mulch. And for trees, be on the lookout for aphids, scale insects, spider mites, and dogwood borers. Monitor trees for Japanese beetles. Adults lay eggs in July and August and continually migrate to susceptible hosts. If only a few are present, pick them off by hand and discard them in a jar of soapy water. Neem can be applied to the leaves to reduce feeding by the adults. Use other insecticides for heavy infestations. Keep bagworms at bay by applying the bacterial insecticide BT. As the larvae begin to feed and construct their bags, heavy infestations may require an application of a systemic insecticide later in the season. Light infestations of bagworms can also be controlled by hand picking. Remove the bags with scissors or a knife and dispose of them by dropping them into a container of soapy water. Birds and parasitic wasps will work in concert with your efforts, and low winter temperatures can damage overwintering insect pest eggs. A fire blight is a bacterial disease that attacks apple, loquat, pear, and other trees. Prune out the diseased branches several inches below the infestation. If you cut into a diseased branch, disinfect your pruning shears with Lysol, which is less corrosive than the traditional mixture of water and household bleach. At 4 parts water to 1 part bleach. This can prevent the spread of fire blight to other branches or trees. Powdery mildew is a grayish-white fungal disease that attacks the leaves, flowers, and shoots of older cultivars of crepe myrtle. Prune out heavily infested shoots. Fungicides are available. However, specialized equipment may be required to treat large crepe myrtles. Instead, grow the Foria hybrids, which are resistant to powdery mildew. They are crosses between the Chinese Langerstemia indica and the Japanese L. Foria, developed by Dr. Donald Egolf of the U.S. National Arboretum. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Dean Silver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. And I hope you'll join us again next time for when we continue the month of June, which we're almost complete, and get into July. Thank you so much.